This is The Forgetting.
I was in this room and I didn't know where I was. 4 o'clock in the morning, the only thing I knew, because this is what happens with this disease, you reach out to those you love. And I called my wife at 4 o'clock in the morning. She's in the bed in the next room.
Mm.
And I said, where am I? At the airport, you're supposed to have your quiet voice. Okay. Well, in Alzheimer's, you don't have your quiet voice anymore. The filter has taken that away. So I have my loud voice. And so the attendants, I don't know, Homeland Security, the President of the United States, I have no idea who they are, but they're coming over like saying, WTF. And this big person comes over and I said, they said, can I help you? And I said, it's not working. And she said, what? I said, it's not working. And then my wife said, yes, it is. So now I'm in an argument with my wife and they're trying to calm me down. Three weeks ago in Portland, Maine, I spoke to 500, maybe 600 people, Alzheimer's Association up there. Whole room was filled. It was the second year they asked me to come back. You know, I told them right out front, I said, look, I don't want your pity. I want you to see your story through me. And as I talked, they cried. But they weren't crying for me. They were crying for their family. They were crying because this could be their story.
From WCAI in Woods Hole, Massachusetts, and Argo Studios on West 26th Street in New York City, this is The Forgetting, a podcast about dementia. I'm David Shank, author of the book The Forgetting, and senior advisor to an international research consortium called Cure Alzheimer's Fund, which helps make this podcast possible. And with me, as always, is my friend and co-host, Greg O'Brien.
Author— Gave me a promotion, huh?
No. This whole thing would not exist without you as co-host. Trust me, no one wants to listen to me for 45 minutes.
The way you looked at me when I walked in late, I didn't realize I was part of the team still. But
can I read the introduction?
Sorry.
Are you gonna you know?
I know.
All right. With me is my former friend and now interrupter, Greg O'Brien, author of the fantastic book On Pluto: Inside the Mind of Alzheimer's. His book has that subtitle because Greg has early onset Alzheimer's, and he is committed to reporting his experience for as long as he possibly can. That's why this podcast exists, and it's an honor and a treat to have you on again, Greg. And we're doing this particular podcast for the first time in the same room. Usually we're in separate studios. Greg happens to be down in New York City today for a talk that he's giving, and so we took advantage of that, and we're face-to-face, which is a treat for me. It's not as much of a treat for Greg, because he has to look at me.
Yeah, that's a point.
We're both reporters. Am I reporting the truth?
Kind of, yeah.
All right, good. All right, yeah. Thanks for verifying that. How are you, Greg? It's great to see you.
Oh, thank you. I have one good suit, and I know your listeners are going, WTF, where's he going? But so I'm giving a speech at Studio 4-something, 55-0 or whatever. So came down with a suit that my daughter got. I live on Cape Cod, so people on Cape Cod, sometimes they share suits, but I have my own suit, so it makes me special. and I got it cleaned to come down, and we got into a cab, and the cab dropped my son and I, because I don't travel alone, 10 blocks from where we're supposed to be. And so couldn't get a cab. So we're racing in the sweat. I could tell you were pissed off, kind of.
I wasn't, but I wasn't going to let you know that I wasn't pissed off. And so I let you live with
I
that.
I sweat through my suit that I had to give a speech to all these big-time New Yorkers. And I am a former New Yorker, but not big-time, but these guys are. And So I walked in here with my wrinkled, sweaty suit, and you looked at me as if I had burned down a convent full of nuns.
Also not true, but I was sweet and welcoming.
That's what I remember.
I was sweet and welcoming, and I was never worried. And I'm sorry that you had that stressful experience. Although I will say,
we decided it was my son's fault, even though it wasn't.
Yes, of course, we're blaming Connor.
Connor, it's
absolutely
Connor's fault. But
I will say that it's kind of quintessentially New York too, particularly when you're coming in on a warm day, to just be in a little bit too much of a hurry and to have something small go wrong, and it makes you anxious, and so you have even more sweat, and you're trying to find the place, and New York, that's kind of the New York experience.
So I have the attitude, so don't press my buttons.
Oh, really?
Well,
you're right on the edge?
I could be.
We're going to see your anger? You're going to...
People get lost in New York a lot. But when it's Alzheimer's, you have even more. So my mind is going, holy shit. Can I say that word?
Yeah, you can.
Okay. And then my son is all worried about me, and then I start walking in a race walk to meet up with you, and he's kind of jogging after me thinking I'm going to get swallowed up by a manhole cover. But we finally got here.
It's great to see you. I think there's been a small change actually in your routine since we last recorded. You're really always traveling with Connor or someone else now, right? You wouldn't trust yourself to get to point B from point A on your own purely. Is that correct?
I have good airline stories if you want to hear them. Tell me when you want to hear them.
Sure. Well, I mean...
Well, you're in charge because you told me that.
I am in charge, yes.
Okay. You made it very clear.
Don't ever doubt that.
Because you're sitting on the side with a laptop and you put me in a corner. With a dunce cap on.
But you really are more and more reliant, and now really you need someone to travel with you, right?
Yeah. I joke a lot, okay? And it's the Irish, New York Irish in me. You know, if you can't laugh at an enemy, the enemy owns you. And as we've talked before, Alzheimer's stole my mother, my maternal grandfather, my paternal uncle, and my father, and now it's come for me. So I've had the front row seat, and as a journalist, I felt I had no other choice than to chase this demon and write about it and promise my mother on her deathbed that I would do it, because she, like others, just... There was no breath to speak. No one wanted to talk. It was like cancer or AIDS, and no one to give voice to it. So she told me to give it voice, and the only way you can do that is with faith, hope, and humor. Well, I always there are a lot, and I'll explain some of it when you want me to. But there are a lot of train wrecks now, more than ever. But as I tell people, I don't want to show the train wreck, because if I do, people will feel sorry for me, and I don't want that. I want them to see the story through their own lens, that this is a story that could be theirs. But it's a story about hope. It's a story about living. It's a story about fighting. And as Bugs Bunny once said, don't take life too seriously, because nobody gets out alive. So why don't we try to do some good on the way out?
Well, I think people can hear that you've got your humor and your fight in you. But I, if it's okay with you, I do want to draw out some of the details of the wreck, too, because I want people to be aware of the challenges in your life, not just you referring to them as these, you know, big problems, but actually detail some of them. And part of the reason that I want to do that is that, you know, what we want to do through this podcast over time, over months and months, and maybe even years and years, is record how things change for you. So, you know, the abilities that are slowly, hopefully very slowly, slipping away. And so And you're I know you well enough to know that you're very candid about all that. So so I'm not well, I am nervous about asking you about it, but I know that it's okay with you. So that's I do wanna make sure that we cover that.
What I'm nervous about is I'm writing down on a pad that I don't know is mine. So it's okay if I do that, right? You're not gonna throw me out of here, right? Because anything
could happen, Greg.
All right. For those who either deal with this or know someone, thoughts are like, I don't know if people can hear me click. I used to be a good clicker, not so much anymore. Just imagine that you're hearing a click, okay? And in seconds. And so I have to write words down to remind me of something or it's gone. And then I get pissed. And so as you're talking, I'm writing certain words that will focus me on.
Are you in danger of losing thoughts that you're having, or are you in danger of losing parts of the question that I'm asking?
Actually, both.
Okay.
So, you know, when I speak now, I forgot the last time we spoke, but Greg O'Brien, damn pleased to meet you.
You owe me $100, by the way.
Oh, okay.
We'll talk about that later.
When we're done. Oh, I have Monopoly money. I carry that now. Because Alzheimer's steals your finances too. All right, so I was just going to tell you something, and this is good real time, and it's just gone. So I hate to prompt you.
It's okay. Because
this was good what I was going to tell you, and I'm just
I'm going to ask the same question again, which is I want to know how you're more dependent on Connor or someone to travel with you now than you were, say, just a few months ago. And what's changed that you would get lost if you were on your own trying to get.
Well, I do get lost.
Okay.
I won't travel without someone, but I'll get lost in my own town that I've lived for 34 years.
Really?
And there was a time just a week ago where I was lost for 20 minutes. Didn't know where I was. There was a time.
Right in Brewster?
Brewster Chatham. Mm-hmm. The Outer Cape, for those who know it. There was a time, and my wife, Mary Catherine, would tell you, 4 or 5 months ago, I don't sleep a lot now. I never, my mother and Alzheimer's didn't, and I'm up a lot, sometimes just walking around. And I was in this room, and I didn't know where I was. 4 o'clock in the morning, the only thing I knew, because this is what happens with this disease, you reach out to those you love. And I called my wife at 4 o'clock in the morning. She's in the bed in the next room.
Mm.
And I said, where am I?
Mm.
Now, you can imagine, she thought, I'm out in the woods of Brewster.
Right. She doesn't know where you are.
She doesn't know where I am.
Right.
I don't know where I am.
Right.
So she starts, understandably, polite would be raising her voice, yelling and screaming would be more accurate.
Mm.
And I'm in my rage because I'm upset. I'm yelling and screaming back. And then she hears me and she goes, you're in the bathroom. And I go, oh. And
so screaming is good in this story.
Screaming is good because she found me because I scream. But trying to think of the word. I mean, it's really demeaning.
Of course.
I'm telling the story so other people could tell their stories and tell it in a way that sheds light. But I'm 66 years old. I've had a very good career as a journalist, and I can't find my own freaking bathroom at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Mm.
How do you think that makes you feel? Now, that doesn't happen every morning.
I wonder what level of existential terror you have. Is it always frightening to you when moments like that happen? Or are you able to say to yourself, okay, this is what happens to me semi-regularly, and I've got my phone here and I can make a call. And I know you're getting upset, and you said you were angry and you screamed.
David, it, 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 if I could say the word, it scares the shit out of me every time.
Every time.
Every time. Scares the freaking shit out of me. And my family will see it. I'll try not to, I'll remove myself from other people so they don't see it. But it because I know the denouement. And I'm now, and it's just started recently, and I just talked to someone about it. And again, I don't really want to say this because who knows, clients or whatever, you know, but it needs to be said. I don't want to get out of bed in the morning right now.
Hmm.
And that's new. I wake up.
Out of terror or out of depression?
Out of terror, depression, anxiety, rage, fear. It all bubbles up. And so people talk about, whoa, I had a good rest, you know, all those commercials when people, you know, go sleep in those places. And
right.
It ain't that way with Alzheimer's.
Mm.
When I wake up, I have to put my life back together before I get going, and I don't now want to get out of bed. So my life is a series of strategies. And so if anyone is listening or they have who deals with early onset or they have a family member, I have to plan something for myself to make myself get out. So a lot of times now I plan to meet with people early in the morning. So I know.
So you've got a reason
because if I don't have and that reason for a strategy usually deals with another person, so I can't talk myself out of it. if it was just to get up to write, then I'd say, well, I'll just write an hour from now. But if I have to meet someone and someone is going to be in a certain place,
right,
I got to be there. So I try to structure my days that way.
And yet there's a little irony here because your book is getting well known and you've been giving all these speeches and everyone who hears you speak wants to hear you speak again and tells other people, and that turns into more speeches. And I know you've been doing a fair amount of traveling.
When I go to the airport, and you know, a lot of times, you know, I'll speak in California, and you know, my wife, and one trip to LA recently, my wife and Connor, my wife Mary Catherine and Connor were with me, and so we went to the airport, and right away I'm out of sorts, just like I came out of Grand Central in New York. My head numbs up and now I'm upset. And in the old days you used to take your bag, and when they actually had service at the in the airlines where they took care of that stuff, but now there's this kiosk that looks like R2-D2, and you have to punch buttons. And I know this sounds chauvinistic, and it's the Irish side of me, and I apologize to anyone who might be offended, but I used to be the guy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The guy.
The man in charge.
The man in charge.
Yeah.
Okay. And I know it's not sensitive to say that, but I used to be, but I'm not anymore. And I can't be. And I find that very upsetting.
Mm.
So my wife is over with R2-D2 plugging in stuff. And the only thing I could think of is to say, it's not working, because that's the only thing I could think of. It's not working. And she says, no, it's fine, because she knows me now.
Right.
And of course, it takes a long time to do that. And I said, see, it's not working. Now, at the airport, you're supposed to have your quiet voice. Okay, well, in Alzheimer's, you don't have your quiet voice anymore. The filter has taken that away. So I have my loud voice. And so the attendants, I don't know, Homeland Security, the President of the United States, I have no idea who they are, but they're coming over like saying, WTF. And this big person comes over and I said, they said, can I help you? And I said, it's not working. And she said, what? I said, it's not working. And then my wife said, yes, it is. So now I'm in an argument with my wife, and they're trying to calm me down. So finally she poked those things. But then I turned to the attendant and I said, see, it's not working. So it spits these things out. And they're the things that they used to put on the bags. mm-hmm. you know, the bag tax.
Yep, right.
So I'm all out of sorts right now because that's it's a tumbling. You just go deeper and deeper and deeper. And so she hands them to me. And in my loud voice, I said, what the hell am I supposed to do with these? Mm. And she looked at me. She said, you put them on your bags. Without thinking, in my loud voice, I said, am I supposed to fly the f***ing plane too? Now, you're not, maybe I shouldn't say that word. You're not supposed to say that in an airport. All of a sudden, people start converging. And we had some splaining to do.
Right.
So
all the traveling and challenges, even though they're more frustrating than they used to be, it's also real good to have those challenges. Those are the things that are getting you out of bed, and those are the things that, like...
You feel at a time when you've lost a lot of self-esteem, and, you know, I joke about it and stuff like that, but I don't have confidence in myself anymore. I don't have confidence in my mind. I have confidence in my soul and my heart, and I've learned to speak from the heart. And we've talked about this also before, where people say, what's on your heart? Speak from your heart. And the mind overrides that. But I don't trust my mind now, and I speak more from my heart. And that's been freeing. But you never get used to the fear. You never get used to the anxiety. You never get used to the loss of self-esteem. And there are times when I just cry. And there are times when my wife cries. And it's funny, Alzheimer's and our marriage has brought us closer together as it brought my father and mother. They started out this loving couple and romance and had 10 kids. And then they kind of grew apart. And then they got closer in my mother's Alzheimer's. And likewise with my wife, this is a disease that has brought our love full circle.
So when you go out and you talk to groups, what's the best result of what you're doing when you talk to a group like you're gonna talk to in a few hours? What are you hoping to get, and what are you getting from these?
Well,
or what are they getting from you? Is what I mean to ask.
Good example was 3 weeks ago in Portland, Maine. I spoke to 500, maybe 600 people, Alzheimer's Association up there. Whole room was filled. It was the second year they asked me to come back. And you know, I told them right out front, I said, look, I don't want your pity. I want you to see your story through me. And as I talked, they cried. But they weren't crying for me. They were crying for their family. They were crying because this could be their story. Before the speech was over, I got 2 standing ovations. I cried like a little boy, and it was about them. And I try to be the mirror, the lens that people can look through. And I always tell them, I said, look, I'm just here to talk to you so you can see potentially what lays ahead. And I said, look, I'm the most imperfect person in the world. And I always say, I've committed every sin imaginable, but murder and adultery, and I've been tested in both. And that usually gets a good laugh. And I say, so I'm just a regular guy, but I'm trying to speak from the heart. And at a time when I feel my life has no meaning, to get back to your question, the fact that I might be able to open some doors for people to look at themselves, that makes me feel good. And just 3 weeks ago when I left, because just like when we do this thing today, my brain is like an iPhone battery, you know? It does well when it works, but that it has a short life. And so I just had to go decompress, and I was sitting in a chair outside the conference area. And not particularly kind of spacing out or going out to Pluto. And more than 100 people came up to me and wanted to tell me their stories. At a time when I don't feel very good about myself, I don't love myself anymore. Mm. And we might have talked about that.
Mm.
But I said, wow, okay, you know, and I as I said before, I'm the most imperfect guy in the world. I don't know if I told you, I don't want to repeat myself, the WTF talk I had with God the other day. Did I tell you about
that? No.
So I got very upset. It's not my place to proselytize. I was raised Irish Catholic, but I've always said I'm a little more evangelical, but don't tell my Dublin relatives because I'll get stoned. And so I was very angry at God. So I had, or God, the universe, what, you know, it's not my place to define. People
right.
define in different ways. And I fully respect that. And so I said, I had the WTF. I said, do you know who I am? Do you got a clue? And I said, you gave me Alzheimer's. I think, you know, I also have prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm.
You gave me severe spinal stenosis and scoliosis. I have no feeling in my feet, in my hands. You gave me clinical depression as a boy. And I just got over it for 5 months. I had severe bronchial or walking pneumonia.
Mm.
And I said, you got a clue? Do you know who I am? And what are you doing? And I want to coach. Now, I know in New York you can't say this, but I want a God who's like a Bill Belichick coach. And I know that's verboten here. And there's no Deflategate. So, but okay, you could say what you want. But I want a tough God. That's just me. I want a tough God. And I heard back, you know, I said, do you know who I am? And I heard back, yes, dumbass, I made you. And I have you right where I want you. And I said, okay, good. I just needed to know someone was there. And it kind of, in the moment, defined the walk in Alzheimer's, just needing to know that someone's there. Someone bigger than you is there.
Even with all this sadness and tragedy and terror And we know that it's going to get worse, right? We know that it's going to get worse with you and your family.
I'm saying it in slow motion, so.
Yeah. Even with all that, I just have to say that it's a great feeling to be with you. I always love seeing you. I always love talking to you. It's great to talk to you over the phone. It's great to talk to you over a studio line in another city, but it's been a treat to just sit here and look in your eyes. And even though you're saying these really tragic things, and we all know, you know, too well, the depth of the tragedy here, I'm not filled with overwhelming sadness myself. I just have such a good feeling of being here with you. So I'm just grateful that we're able to do this. It's just as a very selfish thing. I enjoy doing this. It makes me feel good to talk to you and to talk about these things. And I just wanted to.
I love you, and I think you know that. And the sadness comes in loss of memory, but not loss of soul. And I've said this before. When that moment happens, I'm not afraid to die. Years ago, I was. I know I'm going to a better place. And so my focus right now is do something while I'm here. And I'm at peace with that, and I've never been before.
Hmm.
I know my wife will be, you know, okay, I worry about my children, but I'm not doing this alone. This isn't just me.
Well, that's it for our show today. Greg and I want to thank our colleagues at Cure Alzheimer's Fund, especially Dr. Rudy Tanzi, chair of its International Research Consortium. In between his breakthrough discoveries in Alzheimer's, Rudy composed and performed our theme music. Amazing guy and fun to be with. Paul Ruest is our engineer here at Argo Studios in New York City. At WCAI in Woods Hole, the engineer is Dan Tridle. The Forgetting is a production of WCAI. Our producer is Sean Corcoran. And Greg, you still owe me $100, so.
I'm going to have to fax that to you, or I'll give it to Sean.
Well, bring it next time.
All right, okay.
Thanks for listening.
Hey, God bless you.
I think we're done.